And right now, I'm very happy to welcome back to our program Amy Littlefield. She's the abortion access correspondent with The Nation magazine and a freelance investigative reporter who focuses on the intersection of religion and healthcare. Amy, thank you so much for making time to be on our program this evening.
Thanks for having me, Scott. It's great to be back.
So I'm particularly happy that you could be here with us tonight to talk about your recent article titled "An Abortion Ban Killed Amber Thurman and Likely Many More." And this occurred, of course, you wrote the article after this past week when the investigative news organization ProPublica reported on the first documented case of a woman who suffered death as a result of anti-abortion laws after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade in June 2022. Tell our listeners about this Georgia resident, Amber Nicole Thurman, who was only 28 years old, had a six-year-old son, and what caused her death?
Yeah. So, you know, since Roe v. Wade was overturned, a lot of us who follow this issue have been waiting, holding our breaths, waiting to find out who are, as I put it in an article I wrote for The Nation last year, who our dead woman would be, who the woman, the first person who we were going to learn had died as a result of an abortion ban post-Dobbs would be. And we know her name now, and it's Amber Nicole Thurman. And she was 28. She worked as a medical assistant. She had a six-year-old boy. She loved to take him to petting zoos and the beach. And as was terribly predictable, you know, in a country where we know Black women seek abortions at higher rates and also die far more commonly from maternal health complications, she was a young Black woman. And she died because doctors in Georgia did not perform a very simple routine procedure to remove tissue that she had retained in a rare complication after undergoing a medication abortion. And that was because the state of Georgia had made that routine procedure that would have saved her life a felony. There's a six-week ban in Georgia that, you know, makes medical providers afraid of committing a felony and going to prison for providing medical care. And so Amber Nicole Thurman had wanted a procedural abortion in Georgia. The state had a six-week ban. She had to travel 4 hours away to North Carolina. And because she hit traffic, she missed her appointment for the procedural abortion that she wanted. She had a medication abortion instead, which in the vast majority of cases is fine. You know, she was well within the standard of care for that treatment. She suffered a rare complication, went to the hospital to have that complication treated. And again, that routine procedure that would have saved her was a felony in the state of Georgia. And so she died. I mean, what's remarkable, you know, there's two things that I want to point out about her death, right? One is that it was so entirely predictable that reproductive justice activists, including in the state of Georgia, which has one of the highest maternal mortality rates in the country, have been screaming about how this is going to happen. If you ban abortion at 6 weeks in a state with one of the highest rates of maternal mortality in the country, you know, attorneys fighting this ban warned of this, they were ignored. And so this is where we are, you know, with this little boy starting a new school year without his mom. The other thing that I want to point out about it is just how very rare it is that we can look at the death of a young woman of color in this country that has, you know, the highest rate of maternal mortality in the developed world and pinpoint it and say it stemmed directly from this particular public policy, right? It rarely happens. The New Yorker did a piece, you know, a while back about a young woman named Yanni Glick, a Latina woman in Texas who died, you know, from pregnancy-related circumstances. And it's hard to draw a bright line and say the abortion ban killed someone. But what's so remarkable in Amber Nicole Thurman's case, ProPublica was able to pinpoint and say, yes, she died from this abortion ban because the Maternal Mortality Review Committee in the state looked at her death and said it was preventable. They ruled that it was preventable. And that should be an indictment of, you know, state policymakers in Georgia, of everyone involved who let this death that was entirely foreseeable and preventable happen.
Amy, I wondered if you would discuss the difficulty ProPublica, as an investigative journalistic news organization, the difficulty they faced in confirming the facts surrounding Amber Thurman's preventable death and what that may tell us about cover-ups that could occur across the country in the near future, may be happening as we speak.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, again, it takes so much. You know, we learned from the blurb that ProPublica published with that story that the reporter, Kavitha Serrana, had first reached out to the family over a year ago. We know because Amber Nicole Thurman's family was on Oprah that, you know, her mom said she didn't want to speak out at first. She turned the ProPublica reporter away. She wasn't ready. And, you know, and that it was a decision to speak out because, you know, she felt like people around the country needed to understand that this was happening. But the amount of work, I mean, documents, you know, and many of us who work in the space have done it. You know, it is a painstaking process going through public documents. And then you're talking to traumatized families and asking them to relive their pain, you know, in order to share. Or in some cases, you know, to the women themselves, if they survive these ordeals, you know, you're asking them to tell their pain and bear that and go through it again publicly. And so I think it's incredibly difficult, and we should commend these families for being willing to share these stories. You know, and there's a second woman I want to point out. Amber Nicole Thurman is the first we heard about. ProPublica then published a second report about another Georgia woman named Candy Miller, who had been warned that her health was so fragile she could die if she had another pregnancy. And so and both of them, they became pregnant in 2022, shortly after the 6-week ban took effect. Candy Miller ordered abortion medication online, experienced the same rare complication as Amber Nicole Thurman, was afraid to seek care because of the state's abortion ban. And so instead was suffering at home, taking medication, and eventually her husband found her unresponsive in bed with her 3-year-old daughter by her side. I mean, that is a detail I just can't, what we are putting these families through. I mean, you know, this woman is laying dead in her bed, you know, with her 3-year-old beside her. And so this was another death that ProPublica was able to confirm that was ruled preventable. But, you know, it does not happen very frequently that you get a document that says in black and white that this death was preventable, right? Oftentimes there are other complicating factors in someone's life. There are so many different ways in which our healthcare system and our economic system fail young women of color. So it's really remarkable that we have a case we can trace back to a particular policy. I think the question now becomes, what's going to happen as a result of that? Right. Will these policies that we now know killed 2 vibrant young mothers in the state of Georgia be allowed to stand?
Right. You know, I did want to ask you a bit about poverty and racism. Tell us about the conditions of poverty and racism that are an important factor in maternal mortality across the United States, irrespective of Roe versus Wade and the abortion bans. As you point out in the article, the United States has the highest maternal mortality rate in the entire industrialized world.
Right. And of course, and those rates are so much higher for young women of color. Right. I mean, and I keep thinking back to that New Yorker article that Stephanie Atelidra did on Yenny Glick, the young Latina woman in Texas, an aspiring nurse, aspiring scientist, certified nursing aide. She had a whole bunch of health conditions, hypertension, diabetes, that made pregnancy risky for her. Right. And she was having trouble affording the medication she needed and affording prenatal care. So you see layer upon layer of complications, right, that racism and poverty are causing in this young woman's life. And then she had an acute hypertensive episode, became severely ill. No one ever offered her an abortion. And she died awaiting transfer to a larger hospital. So a death like that, of course, is no less tragic, right? This is a vibrant young woman who is gone in a state that, you know, bans abortion. And so, but it was harder in that case. And I keep thinking about why this story got less attention, you know, than what we're seeing with the ProPublica story now. I mean, possibly one explanation is that we're close to an election where abortion is going to be one of the major issues. But I think another answer to it is that there wasn't an ability to draw a very clear line and say this policy caused this death, right? It was a series of compounding factors, including racism and poverty, that are endemic in this country. But the death of young people, of young mothers who are dying, especially, you know, Black women at much higher rates in this country, every single one of those deaths is just as tragic. And many of them are, in fact, preventable.
Right. We're speaking with Amy Littlefield. She's the abortion access correspondent with The Nation magazine. We're talking about her recent article for The Nation titled, "An Abortion Ban Killed Amber Thurman and Likely Many More." Amy, you brought up a case, I think we talked about the last time you were on the air with us, a case in Ireland of a young dentist by the name of Savita Halappanavar. She died in 2012 as a result of Ireland at that time's very strict anti-abortion laws, and it set off a revolt among the Irish to repeal that Catholic nation's anti-abortion restrictions. What can we learn from the experience of the Irish and what they did in terms of this tragic death of this young woman and how it really provoked a reaction against these draconian laws that are killing people?
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing it shows is that one death, under the right circumstances, one death can be enough to ignite a movement and to change a policy, right? And so when she died, her name, Savita, became a rallying cry. You know, her poster, her picture was everywhere. Her name was chanted, you know, at rallies. And to eventually, you know, the people of Ireland were able to repeal this nationwide abortion ban. It was a huge shift in policy that happened because they looked at this woman's death and said, we cannot let this happen again. And I think that shows that one dead woman can be enough and should be enough, that when we know we can trace a policy, you know, directly to a death, that it can lead to change. I think I also don't want to overlook, you know, activists in Ireland had been laying the groundwork for repeal for many years, right? There had been court battles, there had been, you know, social protests happening. This did not happen in a vacuum, right? The conditions had been laid for the work to have the impact that it did. You know, I think about the death of George Floyd in this country and how one person's death can ignite, you know, so much awareness and social protests. I also, though, you know, and I'm working on a book about the history of the anti-abortion movement and how we lost Roe. You know, history, unfortunately, is full of cases where women have died as a direct result of anti-abortion policies, and those policies are still with us today. The Hyde Amendment, for example, the ban on federal funding of abortion that was passed in 1976, killed a young mother and student from South Texas named Rosie Jimenez, who had had two abortions before that were funded under Texas Medicaid. The Hyde Amendment cut off that funding, so she went to a midwife and had an abortion that was performed in unsafe conditions, contracted a terrible infection, suffered in agony the same way these two women in Georgia did, and died and left behind a daughter who grew up without her. Mm. So, and the Hyde Amendment endures to this day. You know, years after Rosie is gone and years after the book that exposed her death is out of print. And so we do not have to look far to see these examples from history where the deaths of young women, especially young women of color, you know, do not lead to the policy changes that they ought to.
Right. Well, Amy, as you mentioned earlier, we have an election coming up November 5th with a lot at stake. In addition, there are 10 referendums across the country this November on abortion rights at the state, at the state level. Six states have already had abortion referendums, and they've all been won by pro-choice, but all been won by the pro-choice side. And among the 10 states voting this November are Arizona, Colorado, Florida, Maryland, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New York, and South Dakota. But to get to this death that you wrote about in the Nation article, what has been the response to this death of Amber Thurman by the Kamala Harris campaign? And what would your advice be to the campaign to highlight this tragic death? And what's at stake for the country in terms of reproductive rights when people go to the polls on November 5th?
Yeah, I mean, Kamala Harris, you know, to her credit, has spoken even before this about the risks and harms posed by abortion bans. I know she met with Amber Thurman's family and was on Oprah with them. You know, if I were her, I would go to Georgia. I would be in these women's hometowns. I would be with their families, holding up photos of them, emphasizing that these deaths were preventable and laying them at the feet of Republican policymakers, and not just Donald Trump, right? I mean, we have to remember abortion is an issue that has been shaped almost entirely at the state level, right? I mean, especially now, but even before the Dobbs decision, when states were like Georgia were chipping away at abortion access, it really depends on your state lawmakers, on your governor, on your attorney general. And so, you know, I would, you know, if I were Kamala Harris or if I were advising her, I would say go to Georgia and maybe, you know, channeling that outrage in this state where these two vibrant young women have just died could help lead to, you know, changes down the ballot, right, that might have a direct impact on the 6-week ban in this state.
Well said. I want to stay in touch and have you back to talk more about these issues, but much appreciation for writing them with the proper emotion behind it, because this is not science. There is so much of humanity tied up in our politics at this moment. When it comes to reproductive rights and reproductive health care, it's important to highlight the human side and the human suffering that you write about so well. So thanks so much, Amy, and we'll look to stay in touch. People can find the article we've been talking about, An Abortion Ban Killed Amber Thurman and Likely Many More, at thenation.com, right?
That's right. Thank you so much, Scott.
All right. Thank you, Amy. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Amy Littlefield. She's the abortion access correspondent with The Nation magazine.